Hello, everybody. What's up? It's me. It's Professor Broman. We're back. It's episode 80 of Ask Broman. It's very exciting. It was about 8:41 on a Wednesday morning, September 26th. Fair winds and light weather as we're flying the podcast into the station. Hanging out, playing some Warframe, and we're going to be answering more questions from chat. Talk about streaming, talk about charity, talk about whatever you want. It will be really awesome. So if you ever want to join us, as a reminder, we've been doing it pretty consistently in the mornings lately, so tune in morning time in Eastern time, twitch.tv/ProfessorBroman, and we will let's get it. So this question from Unbeknown says, I've always wondered how much time streaming involves, like, what is the ratio of off-stream time to on-stream time, and is there much other than streaming you need to do to keep up the income? Oh, so it's actually like two questions. So I think that the standard answer for, like, on stream to off stream time is, for every hour you see someone streaming, there's probably about 10 to 15 minutes of like prep or work that goes on behind the scenes. And that's like an average, you know, across the entire year, whether that's talking to artists, talking to mods, setting up commands, working on your setup, researching and learning about what games are coming out, paying attention to the ratio of, you know, like, whatever, like, whether it's number crunching, analytics, like, setting things up, and just, like, even taking time to be creative, because streaming is absolutely a creative venture, and I think a lot of people forget that. One of the biggest issues I see broadcasters run into is they'll get successful or they start making money, and then they get, it's like they get writer's block for their stream, right? Like, they get this, what's the right word? You know, the stream stops changing and evolving. They stop growing as a creator, so their stream sort of stagnates. I think that the time you put in off stream is of equivalent importance. You need to make sure that the time you put in off stream and the time you put in on stream match up. Because if you're streaming too much and you're always depleted, it doesn't work out. And you'll do things like, you'll miss stuff. When I started broadcasting, I never really had to pay attention to game launches and things like that, because I was always streaming the same game. I was always speedrunning Borderlands 2. But that kind of led into a bad habit as a broadcaster. And one of the things I had to learn after I transitioned from streaming that to Destiny to more variety, and it took me about a year and a half, is to really pay attention to game launch and release schedules and games that I was passionate about and games that might affect the various analytics of my channel. So that's my thoughts on, like, you know, the ratio of streaming. And then the second question is there a lot you have to do off stream in order to keep up your streaming income? Sort of referencing back to what I just said, I think that a lot of the value that you can provide to your viewers, which is the reason why people watch you every day and the reason why people subscribe to you and all of that other stuff, has an incredibly large amount to do with the time that you put in off stream. So, like, for me, off stream things include keeping up with my editor to make YouTube content, publishing this podcast, posting and interacting with people on Instagram and Twitter. And then even deeper down the rabbit hole is managing Guardian Con on the charity side as the charity director, and managing King's Coast. Those things occupy a lot of my off stream time. I think that streaming when it comes to income can really be, and this is important. I hope there's like other broadcasters here, because this is a monetization is a, such a tough subject to talk about. But I think that you need to realize on Twitch that there are times when it's going to feel really simple, and you know it'll be a it'll be very much kind of like a traditional career where you put time in and you make income, and then there's, you know, there'll be feast and famine inside of, you know, content creation where you're going to just make an ass load of money 1 or 2 months because the game that is that you make content for is super hype, and then that hype will die down and you'll make less. I think that making sure that you are expecting those income increases and decreases is incredibly important, so that you can build your life around that and budget your life around that. It takes a lot of discipline, but if you don't do it, there's a really big chance that you could just accidentally go broke because you weren't paying enough attention, which is like, you know, not good. Not good at all. You've got to make sure that you keep everything budgeted out so that no matter what the variance is in your income, you're going to be okay. And this is my horror story when it comes to budgeting, chat. Streaming is incredibly volatile, and the best illustration I have of that volatility is, if I were to compare January 2015 to January 2016, for Twitch income, for every dollar that I made in 2015, I made 30 cents in 2016. So that's a 70% reduction in income based off of a really general average. So when I say that budgeting is important, it is very fucking important. I hope that, you know, if you're listening and you're a broadcaster and things are either going kick ass awesome for you or things are going shitty, that you like take that to heart, because there are not a lot of other professions that have that much of a swing in income. It can be really emotionally devastating because you think, like, what am I doing wrong? Or you think, why is my community abandoning me? Or whatever. Like, those are the emotions that you go through. But you've got to stay focused. And you've got to make sure that you keep putting out the best content you can, no matter what's going on behind the scenes. So that is... that's a very real answer for you. With some solid examples, if I do say so myself. Jazzy Phil asks, how do you value relationships with developers? And a follow-up, is the process of agile software development write a bell? I think that might be misspelled. And do you find it effective as a potential product owner? Sorry if too specific. I need you to clarify the second part. But I'll talk about the first one. That's easy. I think that when I started broadcasting, I didn't value relationships with developers enough. I was a little bit narcissistic. I think everyone is when they get started making content. Like, you get your first whatever followers, and then maybe you kind of think you're the shit for a little bit. It's that weird uncanny valley of you know, progressing. And I used to think, like, oh, well, developers should come to me. But in reality, like, you need to go to them. Like, the most important thing that you can do, I think, as a content creator is tell the people who make things that you enjoy the things that they make. And that will build a fantastic rapport with, you know, with all of the, whether it's game developers or software developers, whoever it might be. It's going to be people who know that you respect their hard work and that you're someone who can give reasonable critique, you know, without being a jerk. Building relationships with developers leads to a lot of great things, whether that, you know, leads to a goal that you might have in a future of like working at a game studio or just providing input and having a meaningful experience with, or having a, you know, meaningful interactions, about a game that you love and are passionate about. You know, there's a lot of different ways to approach, relationships with developers, but I think that they're important, for your longevity. Now, they're also, not to overstate that, but it's not crucial to your success. And I know that sounds like we're pulling in two directions, but let me make sure I clarify it. Some people overvalue things. You know, we talk all the time about how people overvalue, like, whether or not they have a face cam. Like, they'll spend 20 hours debating whether or not they should put a face cam on stream, when in reality they should just be streaming. And sometimes relationships with developers becomes that. You focus so much on building this relationship with a developer that you stop making content, or you chase it. I think this is a behavior I see more often than not, is broadcasters will be like, they're seeking validation for their hard work, which I get, but they're seeking that validation through recognition from an authority source. So the game developers are one of those sets of people. You know, getting recognized by game developers, you know, making good content feels really good. But ultimately, on the career side of things, if you're looking at it from purely a broadcaster perspective, it's not going to do as much as you think. You know, I think that building strong long-term relationships with developers is incredibly important. You know, and having that positive rapport is important. But I definitely want to caution you against, like, you don't want to chase after it like it's a badge. I see that happen with content creators all the time, whether it's with game developers or software developers or other broadcasters or whatever. It's just this constant chase of like one more hit from the recognition sauce bucket. And I really think that, is, you know, the counterpoint is, make sure you're still working on your own stuff and that you think what you're doing is valid. It'll help you provide better feedback. It'll keep you having great, strong relationships with not just developers, but, you know, everyone around you. And it'll keep you happier, and it'll keep you going long term. Let's see if Jazzy Phil rewrote the second half of this. Agile is the idea of software. You didn't type the word agile. You typed a bell. To go back to your question, is the process of agile software development right? And do you find it? So I still don't understand that question. Ring a bell. Okay, ring a bell. All right. Agile software development is incredibly important. I think being first to market with a lot of stuff matters on Twitch. You know, some of the stuff that I use on my stream is very, you know, it's an alpha or beta, like the program that I use to control my lights when somebody subscribes. That is, like, everyone's like, what do you use? Give me a link. And I don't, because it's not ready for everyone to use yet. It's buggy. It breaks sometimes. And I can't overload this person's software because it's an alpha. You know, there are a lot of things like that. I think you'll find that a lot of successful broadcasters try to have their own custom stuff, and they try to iterate on that custom stuff as frequently as possible. With Twitch, you can make a really hyper specialized piece of software. And even if it's buggy and doesn't work, if it's cool, people will use it. For example, we have developed the sub bomb alert, you know, that is on my stream and Corey's stream. And those, you know, that is something that is very alpha and has not been iterated on a lot. But we got it to market as fast as we could, because it's a difference maker. Speed means everything. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that is a an example of that. Question. This is from Mind One. If you're in it for the long haul, is it possible to make Twitch your full-time job financially, but to make living wage? Absolutely. Absolutely. The you know, Twitch is definitely still very new. As much as we talk about saturation, I think that Twitch and other platforms, people have gotten really spoiled. And I think this happens with every, you know, like it happened with YouTube when YouTube blew up. You know, the first complaint when something reaches a little bit more market maturity is, boy, this is way harder now. Because it used to just be that you had to show up, like you were showing up to a job and then you just grow. But yeah, I think that streaming and content creation is absolutely something that you can do as a full-time job. If you're starting from zero and you're in it for the long haul, I don't know if I would necessarily recommend starting on Twitch. I would recommend exploring your options. There are people who have had some pretty blazingly powerful success with Facebook gaming, with yeah, with Facebook gaming and with Mixer. You know, there's more than one game in town now. And I think that, you know, signing on to the right team is part of an equation to sort of fast track that entire experience. But I absolutely believe that, you know, if you've got it and you're passionate about gaming and you love to stream, then it's not going to, you know, it's not impossible to make a living wage. You know, a lot of people look at Twitch and they think, how do I become as successful as insert top 10 broadcaster who's making millions of dollars a year? And I think the reality is, if you were to look at how many people are doing Twitch as their full-time job, you'd be surprised with how much broader that spectrum of people is. You know, I personally believe really strongly, in fact, that it's possible for people to, you know, do this as a full-time job, because as many different kinds of gamers exist with all of their varying passions, there is an equivalent amount of, you know, people who are out there to make great content. That's one of the reasons why that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this consulting thing with Digital Extremes, because I believe that this game is fantastic and it has an incredibly strong community. And I think that, you know, there are so many broadcasters and YouTubers that make great content for this game, and figuring out a way to help everyone learn to position themselves so that they can make content about the game that they love, that has a massive community, as a full-time job, it's a benefit for not just the content creator, but for the developers as well, obviously. All right, let me so many questions. Trying to find a couple more through in here. Oh, congratulations, Lawrence. Somebody got hired by the Discovery Channel. That's pretty cool. Seismic Harbor has a really great question. Can doing charity streams, i.e. Extra Life, etc., be detrimental to channel growth if they do too soon? I do not think that doing charity is ever going to be detrimental to your channel growth. I think that if you're doing charity all the time, it will be. That being said, there's some channels that do charity all the time and they do just fine. But I think that in general, if you are continuously asking your viewers for money, whether that money is for you or that money is for a charity, it gets exhausting. So I'd say it's about striking a good balance between the content that you want to make, the charity that you want to be involved with, and how frequently you ask folks, you know, to donate to that charity. charity is absolutely, like, I think the fairest way to look at it is charity is a business. And like any business, it has a revenue stream. You know, it has to have a revenue stream and all this other stuff, but it's still money that's coming out of someone's pocket and going somewhere. And granted, it's going somewhere that's a fantastic cause that you're passionate about, and I get it, but every time that you end, if you're constantly putting that in front of somebody, it'll have diminishing returns. So, you know, as somebody who's been doing charity for a while and pretty successfully, I think the most important thing that you can do is sort of figure out your community's tolerance for how frequently you can do charity stuff like that, while still hitting your goals and then sort of staying inside of that wheelhouse. I think more of charity being detrimental to your channel growth, I think that the issue is a lot of people think that charity is going to make their channel grow a lot. That is just kind of fundamentally untrue, unfortunately. A lot of people take the route, oh, if I do this charity thing, then my channel is just going to blow up. And that's not true. That's not true at all. But, you know, if it's what you're passionate about, that flavor in your community is so, it's important. You know, it's important to include the things that you're passionate about into your broadcast, but if you make it the sole focus, is an issue. I feel like I'm talking in circles at this point, but charity is so multidimensional, and I feel like people over leverage it. So I really want everyone to understand like all of the tiny little nuances, because that's ultimately what's going to help you be successful raising money for whatever charity that you're participating in. Under half asks, considering you're in the coffee business, what are some of your favorite independent coffee companies? I ask because I'm drinking Black Rifle Coffee. Black Rifle Coffee Company is a great example of somebody who decided to do something different and really leverage social media into their growth. Their model is kind of what we based King's Coast off of, and then we took a different approach with the product, obviously, and the market. You know, so I think that for me, I kind of look up to most the things that I'm passionate about are like local coffee shops. So here in Tampa, there's a place called Buddy Brew. There's a place called, I can see their logo in my head and I can't remember. It's like Pour or something like that. P-O-U-R. You know, there are like them, back in my hometown in St. Louis, there's a company called Blueprint Coffee, and I'm a huge fan of what they have going on. You know, I'm a big fan of any company that's you know, out there making really good coffee and delivering it to people. Our goal with King's Coast is to take that high quality experience and make it available to everybody. Via, you know, pricing and education and all this other stuff. But I have a lot of respect for other coffee companies. Also, if you like Black Rifle Coffee Company, you should try our stuff too. Just saying. It's different, but it's good. Yeah. All right. Daedric Viper says, I currently live stream as a way to curb my anxiety and show a more fun side of my personality. At the moment, I only stream through my Xbox, but I want to improve. How should I do that? I mean, I think that when you're starting out, the most important part about improving is learning how to refine your style as a broadcaster rather than adding more equipment onto your list. If you've got the funds available to add more equipment, like, you're hanging out and you're like, oh, I have an extra $200 to buy a webcam, or I have a, you know, I have an extra $2,000 sitting around to build a really great PC for me to stream off of, then by all means, like, those are fantastic investments, even if you're, even if, you know, broadcasting is just a hobby for you, because gaming is obviously something all of us are passionate about, and having a nice PC isn't something anyone's going to hate on. Or you're not going to, I guess it won't be a purchase you mega regret, but I think that, I think ultimately, in my mind, what's going to help you improve is really learning the skill and style of broadcasting. So I think the best thing you can do to improve when you're starting out is, you know, obviously stream. But when you're not streaming, try and take time to watch as many broadcasters as you possibly can, right? Try to, you know, try to take time and watch the top 10 broadcasters on Twitch and see what they're doing that's successful. Why is it successful? What is making it matter? And then applying those lessons to where you're at currently. I think market research is something many people avoid, because there's this mentality of always be streaming, etc. But I know from experience, if you stream too much, or if you're overexerting yourself and you're not taking time, interestingly enough, this links way back to the first question. If you're not taking time to sort of invest in that creative side of yourself, you're going to start getting diminishing returns for the content that you're making. You will be happier if you take time to learn and grow than if you just kind of forcefully grind it out all the time. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. With various broadcasters, you need to take time to learn about what you can do better and keep yourself sort of educated. So Daedric Viper, I'd say getting into the practice of self-education is the number one best thing that you can do as a broadcaster. This is a really good question. Branded Wolfie asks, do you think using programs to schedule content on Instagram, Twitter, etc. are good, or should you do more organic posts? I think both. You know, if you have, let's say the peak engagement time for your Instagram posts is 1 p.m. Eastern, but you know that tomorrow you're going to be on an airplane at 1 p.m. Eastern, then using a program like Buffer or TweetDeck or like whatever, any sort of program where you can schedule out your content, is going to be beneficial, because you can still hit that sweet spot of timing, even though you might not be available. The issue comes when people, I think, lean too heavily on that, and it makes your content seem flat. Like, if you schedule out posts 10 days in advance and then some big thing happens and you're like, oh, I won't talk about that. I already have everything scheduled. The use of automation makes you walk away from the personality of your content that you're making. That's when I think the problem happens. The social media is social. So I think using the tools that are available is smart, but you still have to make sure you're making, one-off content that feels, authentic to what you're doing. You don't want to just be continuously regurgitating the same three or four posts via automation. But in general, I think it's a fantastic tool that can be used. Very effective. This is a good question, for anyone who makes live content, or, honestly, anybody who makes content in general. How do you react or take action when someone is being incredibly toxic? So, I deflect things with humor, or I deal with it directly. If someone's being an absolute piece of crap, I will call them out. I'll say, like, let's say somebody in chat says, oh, this game is AIDS. I don't think that you should use life-threatening diseases that could potentially be threatening the lives of other people in chat as an insult when you could pull up a thesaurus and look up 100 different words for bad. So if somebody does something like that, I'll say, hey, you know, we don't that's not cool. This is why it's not cool. This is why we don't do it here. So, you know, that's why you got banned, and, you know, hopefully you can come back later and we'll have a good time. If a person doesn't respond well to that, I just remove them completely. Curating your community and the people who are interacting with your content is incredibly important because your community is a reflection of you. You could be the kindest person in the world, but if you have a hard time managing your community and they come across as some of the most awful, toxic people on the planet, that will reflect on you, and everyone's going to be like, oh, this broadcaster, this YouTuber, this, you know, this Twitter account is full of, this is the hateful person. So you have to make sure that you take time to curate it. Now, the issue is, and this is the conflicting point, right? When you make the choice to take a moral stand against toxicity, it will affect your bottom line. There are many people who choose to let their community kind of say and do whatever they want, and they don't sort of try to curate it all in the sake of getting a larger income return, more subscribers, whatever, because when you take a stand against something, you are telling people no, and there is a sizable amount of the internet community and community of human beings in general that cannot handle being told no. So the second they see something like that, they'll go, okay, well, I'll never come back here again because I don't want to get in trouble. And it's like, probably won't if you're a good human being. Ultimately, the decision is up to you. I think that in the long term, building a positive community is going to do more for you than just letting anyone in. I guess the verdict in this situation is still kind of out. I know how I handle everything. It slows down your growth a little bit, but I think that you'll have a better time by curating your community and making sure that the kind of people who are interacting with your content are good representatives of you and who you are. This is an interesting industry question. What do you think about Telltale Games laying off all their employees and then bigger companies reaching out and giving jobs to those people? I think that's great. There are very few industries that, or this could just be me not paying attention, but I don't think it is. But when other companies lay off workers, it's just sort of like, oh, that sucks. But anytime there seems to be layoffs in the gaming space, people are like, oh, hey, so-and-so, you want to come work here? There's a very real sense of, like, game developers taking care of each other. I think it's great. I don't see a downside to it. It makes me happy to see that the first reaction of the industry is to immediately find these people careers again as soon as possible. I don't know, part of me feels like if everybody was that focused then on making sure to mitigate loss like that, it'd probably be better for everybody. You're not a full-time broadcaster? No, I am. I've been streaming full-time for going on 6 years. Yeah. what do you do when you stream daily and people just don't like your stream? I don't worry about the people who don't like my content. I worry about the people that do. I think focusing on that is something that many people miss. They want to make content that everybody likes, but you have to realize that that concept is a fool's errand. It doesn't make any sense. There is no one on this planet that makes content that everyone enjoys. You know, I don't care who we're talking about. Nobody has content that everyone on the planet likes. So I think you need to focus on the finding the people who do enjoy your content and then investing in them. Oof. Hey, thanks, Big Man Gaming. What made you think Twitch was the right thing to do for me? I'll get to that in a second. Someone's running off to their class. One more question before my class starts. What would you tell a new streamer who is shy and doesn't talk much because of that? I would have two statements. One, you need to get the fuck over it, and you need to talk more. I guess three. So that's one option. Two, accept the fact that you're shy, and it's all right that you don't talk a lot, and make sure that when you do speak, it has a lot of value to the people who are watching. Or three, maybe streaming isn't for you. Those would be the three points of contact when I'm having a conversation about that. I think it's important to know yourself and know your limits. And that is part of it, knowing what does and does not work for you. So where was this question? What made you think Twitch was the right thing for me? I mean, I started off doing it for fun, and then the the reality of the option of making it my full-time job sort of came into full view after I had been doing it for a while. The reason I got started on Twitch 6 years ago was it was less populated than YouTube. So if you were looking to mimic my my movements, my life, whatever you want to call it in broadcasting, and you were sort of trying to look to take the same path, I would not be the person who's starting on would not be the person who is starting on YouTube, or wouldn't be the person who's starting on Twitch right now. I would be the person who's starting on Mixer or on Facebook, you know, because that is, those are the places that don't have as much attention right now, where it's going to be easier for you to get started. Easier for you to get attention and easier for you to grow. When you started streaming, did you actively try to grow your community, or did you just start by playing games and people tuned in? I was a very big part of the communities that I was involved with for streaming before I ever streamed. I was in their channels every day. I was involved on forums. And I continued to be involved in those ways as I started broadcasting as well. There is so much value in making sure that you are a quantifiable entity inside of a community. You know, if you're random Joe blank face that's streaming on Twitch, no one's going to know who you are. If you're, oh, that's the guy I know from so-and-so's chat, they're cool, then you're giving yourself a chance. But you have to make sure that you're taking time and that you're building a base on Twitch that isn't just I stream all the time. You need to get your name out there, and the best way to do that is to go into other people's chat rooms, and you don't ask them to come watch your stream. You just go in there, you be a good person, you be who you are, and you let people get to know you. And then when you stream, the people who you connect with will come check you out. That is, you know, and then the growth happened organically to address that. Like, you know, I picked a game I was passionate about. I made great content. I made the channel fun. I was doing something no one else was doing. That was intentional. Like, I started streaming Borderlands 2 speedruns when nobody was doing Borderlands 2 speedruns. And I was very involved and very passionate about that game and that speedrun and that community. And that translated into the growth that happened on my channel. Question. To improve watching past broadcasts and looking for ways to improve is helpful. How do you do it subjectively? Is there an approach you suggest? I don't ever watch my past broadcasts. I'm always sort of live editing myself and taking into account things that I do or do not like on an interactivity level, if that makes sense. I think that watching back your past broadcasts is fantastic, and I'll do them occasionally, especially if people are complaining about a visual issue or something, to sort of identify that. But as far as like my production or me being creative, that's something I have to do live editing on, because going back after the fact, I'll either be too critical or I won't see what I'm missing because I have too much shit going on. I think that developing an ability to developing an ability to live edit yourself, to sort of, you know, be monitoring yourself while you are broadcasting, to see how you're handling different situations, to see different ways you could have approached, you know, interacting with someone who is toxic or celebrating people who are supporting you. I think that being able to do those things, you know, being able to adapt that skill is probably the best way to approach it. I know some people will take times and they'll do sort of postmortems on their broadcasts and things like that. But for the most part, I think that you're going to know what you did right or wrong in the moment, because the feedback loop's just present. You know, it's not like a YouTube video where you have, you're like, oh, I don't know what I did right. I don't know what I did wrong. It's like, you know what you did. You know. You know whether or not you handled it the right way. Yeah, so working on self-awareness is ultimately what's going to get you where you want to go the fastest. Because that's how it works, man. What about Crank says, do you think when you start streaming, you should focus on less saturated games, or is it important to focus on one game long term? I think you should focus on the game that you are most passionate about and that you can make the best content for. and you need to balance that against games where people can actually find you. You know, the issue that a lot of people have is they think like, oh, I love Fortnite, so I'm going to make all the Fortnite content I can, or the best Fortnite is great. You will get buried. You'll get buried and crushed, and no one will ever find your channel because there are so many folks that are just established. And that's, you know, barring some sort of really, like, maybe you are the fucking best player in the entire world. And in the, and in that incredibly competitive environment, you will stand out. But if that's not the case, it's not going to matter. I think that balancing your skill as a broadcaster against games that people can find you in is one of the best things that you can do. And as far as focusing on one game long term for growth, we've had this discussion a lot on the channel, but I'm always happy to have it again. The best thing that you can do is realize that, you know, one game is going to help you grow. But if you are only streaming that one game, you're going to have a hard time branching out and diversifying your content, which you will absolutely need to do in order to maintain your success. Unless, of course, you hit yourself to a franchise game that iterates over and over again and it never fucks up, which is rare. Which is rare. Which is incredibly rare. So again, it's about balance. About balance. This is a good question. I feel like we haven't addressed it on stream in a while, in the podcast either. How do you explain what live streaming is, how it is beneficial to a generation that sees it as just playing video games? So I don't know which generation you're thinking about, because there's even people my age that think it's dumb. I mean, shit, people in Sweden are protesting esports right now, saying esports aren't sports and shit like that. Like, people are mad. The way I the way that I explain it is, you know, people who like cooking watch the cooking channel, and people who like home remodeling watch HGTV. And while these people may never cook, or may never, maybe they're really passionate about cooking, maybe they're really passionate about home remodeling, but it's just not something they can do because of the, let's say, time restraints, which I think is a huge factor, by the way. That's one of the biggest reasons people tune into Twitch, is because they're like, oh, I don't have time to do this end game content, but I can watch someone do it. Or I really like this game and I want to be involved in, you know, a community of gamers still, but I can't because, you know, I can't because of what's going on in my life right now. Twitch is there. You know, in the same way that HGTV is, in the same way that, the cooking channel is, because it provides an outlet for people who are passionate about something to continue engaging with the things that they're passionate about while their life may be forcing them to take a break. You know, and I think when it comes to examples, like, I personally hated the fact that everyone always said video games did nothing good for the world. So I fucking did something about it, and we started Guardian Con, and now we've raised almost $5 million for St. Jude in 3 years. It is absolutely astonishing, the level of good that gaming and gaming creators do in the world. I think that it's important to point those things out. You know, feel free to use Guardian Con, even if you've never heard of it before, as an example. But, like, you know, there are so many places, whether it's Guardian Con or the GDQ events or Extra Life or whatever, where gamers are bringing attention to incredibly important social problems, you know, working to cure diseases, etc. Like, there's just so much that's good that is done. And I think highlighting that's an important thing that we all sort of have to take on ourselves. This is a gigantic question from My Name is Cologne. I started streaming Monday and I've been doing a lot of things and thinking on things of how to follow my passions, figure out ways to discuss things that I not only find interesting, but other people might have an idea, might have any idea right now is to find a hypothetical or a philosophical question, discuss it with them and my answers, but I have a lot of uncertainty about if it's something that's actually interesting. Any advice on how to work on my uncertainty? Well, first of all, I would work on learning how to be a little bit more concise, because that was hard to get through. You need to stop worrying about whether or not something, you need to stop worrying about whether or not something is going to connect with your viewers and trying to predict other people's behavior. And you need to stop doing that. You need to start just doing. Just doing is something that a lot of people avoid. If you have something and you think it's a good idea, then you need to do it. You need to actually do it. You know, if you think that your viewers might enjoy nice philosophical discussions every day, then you've got to start engaging them in those discussions, and you'll know faster whether or not your viewers enjoy content that you're making by actually putting it in front of them instead of, you know, sitting there for days on end wondering whether or not they'll like it. The more time you spend questioning, the less time you spend doing, and doing is what gets shit done. Soul asks, if you are restreaming, and noticing one platform provides most or all of your concurrent viewers, but a separate platform seems to provide more reach, but zero viewers or retention, which of those platforms helping your growth? Both of them. There's no way to determine, you know, the trickle out growth effect from those places. I mean, I would not recommend restreaming for longer than 3 months. I think that streaming yourself to multiple platforms at the same time is a great way to test the waters, but I think it is a mistake to do long term. I think that if you are doing restreaming, you need to pay attention to all of your metrics. Find a place where you feel like not only you connect with the content, but you connect with the platform, and then go all in there. And guess what? Maybe you go all in there and you fucking hate it. And you spend a year. Okay, well, time to try the next platform or the next platform or the next platform. I think that any viewership ever, anywhere, is valuable. Yeah. And I think trying to distill it past that's, you know, you're starting to get into an area where it's predictive. It's not, it's not what you're looking for, man. You know, a lot of people have mentioned that, you know, they'll get more viewers on Twitch, or they'll get more viewers on Mixer, or they'll get more, you know, they'll get more viewers wherever, but they'll have higher concurrency in another location. Ultimately, I don't think the question has to do with platform selection. It has to do with where do you want to place your bet. And again, people are just scared. You don't want to make a mistake. You should want to make a mistake. You should either want to win or make the mistake, and you should want to win or make the mistake right fucking now. Because the longer you wait, the longer you hesitate, the longer you hedge and you get worried and you're concerned and you're trying to find the perfect answer, the further away you actually get from getting anything done. So if you, let's say Mixer has really high engagement for you and you go all in on Mixer and it doesn't work out and it costs you 2 years of your life. Okay. Well, now you know Mixer doesn't work and it's time to try something else. Something you wouldn't have known before. And something you'll never know unless you try. So try. So the question is, if any viewership is valuable, why wouldn't you restream everywhere you can? Because while any viewership is valuable, it is unsustainable to attempt to maintain communities across all three live streaming platforms at the same time. I have yet to see someone do it effectively. I don't personally think that it can be done effectively. And when you are continuously splitting your attention like that, you're also splitting your community. So as much as all viewership is important and it helps you grow, in identifying whether or not it's valuable, it's always valuable. When it comes to the practicality of what's going to drive success, it's going to be picking one place and sticking to it. I get higher viewers on Twitch, higher concurrent on Mixer. I restream and I don't know what to do. Pick one. Pick one. Pick one. Pick one. Pick one. It's very simple. Choose one. What if you create a central hub channel like Ko used to, or how Twitch used to do it? I don't understand that question because Twitch has always been like this. And having a central hub is exactly what I'm saying. It is picking a location to produce all of your content for, and then determining via statistics and analytics which one, or if it is being successful to your desired, quantity. You know. For sure. We're getting really deep into the rabbit hole, but the bottom line is, because of all of the other stuff, that is involved in making content and being successful on a live stream platform, networking, getting integrated with the community, on the platform, familiarity with the platform's delivery, familiarity with other broadcasters on the platform, and a plethora of other things. Those are the reasons why it's unsustainable to stream everywhere. Because I promise you, if I tried to maintain the level of networking that I have on Twitch, on Mixer, and Facebook at the exact same time, I would explode. So making sure that you are specialized is important when you're getting ready to shoot your shot. If you don't specialize, you'll fail. You have to recognize what you're very good at, and you need to leverage that. And it's okay. There, you can disagree with me, and prove me wrong. And I would love to learn from being proved wrong in this situation. But many people have tried for 6 months, and then they have, air quotes, given up trying to be everywhere, picked a location, and then suddenly success. So I know that I'm not wrong with this advice, and I'd rather go off of what I know and the experiences of people who've been on this podcast than try and predict a method for people to do everything all at once when it comes to live content. Jack JH says, bit of a basic question. Does background noise matter if I stream? Sometimes when Michael pick up my background noise, people hear it on stream. Should I act like it's not there? I would make jokes about it. But if you're really worried, you can always put on a noise gate. very practical software solution to the issue that you're having. Incredibly practical, one might say. Yeah. Good discussions today, everyone. Good discussions every day. I think to boil everything down, with everything that we've discussed, if you're listening to this and you feel confused because there's so many different aspects of what we talked about today, please listen to this singular piece of advice. Whatever it is that you want to do, take your chance and get started, because you will learn more from that than you will ever learn hypothesizing every second of every day. Like, I actually get disgusted by the idea of the impracticality of not actually just fucking doing the thing. So please, like, be practical, treat yourself with respect, and take your shot. And in doing so, I think you will be incredibly surprised with the progress that you'll make. All right. Good podcast episode, everybody. Fun stuff. If you're listening, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you, maybe leave a review or subscribe, whatever you want to do. Share it with somebody that you like, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for taking time to tune in to the Broman podcast. Wanted to give a quick shout out to one of the people that make these this podcast possible with their software, and also, wonderful sponsors of the stream, or not the stream, the podcast, Discord. We talk about doing everything in Discord all the time. Discord is the core location if you want to communicate with me or get involved with Ask Broman. So I highly recommend checking it out, especially if you're in a podcast aficionado or you're recording your own. It's a great way to get multiple people on the same wavelength. If you want to join our Discord, it's discord.gg/broman, or you can check out their website and get your own server started today. It's free. Peace.